We're back on the air. Thank you very much. Bear with us. We're ready for a presentation now about the Osage Nation Elder Services and specific services. We want to thank LaDonna for this presentation that we're about to see. So LaDonna, you've got the table. So, and again, we've got people out there in Never Never Land that are listening to us. If they have any questions, we'll let them know how to get hold of you, or through us, we'll get hold of you.
Okay, well, I put the presentation together basically giving an overview of the services Osage nationwide. Our department specifically, the presentation goes into that also, but I wanted to focus on all of the services that are available, and many of them are not elder specific, but they're frequently utilized by elders, and so I wanted to include those. So Osage Nation Social Services, one of our primary services to elders is Adult Protective Services. We become involved in investigations of abuse, neglect, or exploitation. Now, neglect can and often does include self-neglect. That is a big portion of where our adult referrals come from. Now, APS is not specific to elders, but that's primarily what our APS referrals consist of. Although tribal code defines a vulnerable adult as anyone 18 or older with a partial incapacity or an incapacitation of some type. So that could include a lot of different things. But like I said, primarily our referrals consist of elders. And so these services are pretty time limited because we have to get in, see what needs to be done, help get it done, and do our report to the Attorney General and get out. So we're not able to be involved long-term usually. And that's one of the things that kind of can be frustrating, at least for me, when I'm involved in a case where I see a long-term need. We make referrals to a lot of different agencies, and we see a lot of different needs in the course of an investigation. But like I said, we make every effort to end the investigation within 30 days and have our report to the Attorney General within those 30 days. Sometimes, in rare cases, we have to make an extension if we haven't been able to resolve the issues in that short amount of time. We also do, are there any questions about APS?
You're talking about the tribal code and how it defines these individuals. Do you agree with that code as it is written?
Well, previously, this is before I started, it was defined, I believe, as 65 mm-hmm. and older. But we found that there were vulnerable adults that didn't fit into that category, but would have been, and so we aligned it more with the state's definition of a vulnerable adult, because a lot of times we do have, you know, younger people who may have developmental delays or traumatic brain injury, a lot of different things that could cause them to be in jeopardy of abuse or neglect or exploitation.
To your knowledge, at your desk, have you received any calls regarding elders or caregivers regarding the APS services from, say, California, Oregon, or any of the Osages in other states that are looking for services from the nation? And how do you respond to those?
Well,
or do you?
Typically what I have done in the past is I will any call that I receive gets put in as an intake. And so I will coordinate with services in their area that can help to alleviate whatever problem it is that they're having. It could be something as simple as they need some medical equipment and they didn't know about the health benefit card. And so we get them hooked up with constituent services, and then that alleviates that problem. Maybe they needed a lift chair, maybe they needed a shower chair. It could be a number of different things.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, we do from time to time get calls from out of state.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. So we also offer IIM account case management. Sometimes that comes as a result of an APS investigation where we have determined that it may be helpful for that person to have more long-term services than what we're able to offer through APS. And if they have an IIM account, we work with them to determine if they're, first of all, interested in supervision, because sometimes that can be something that's done on a voluntary basis. And if it's not voluntary, then there's a, you know, much more in-depth process that has to be done in order to determine if they qualify for supervision. But go ahead, I'm sorry.
What happens when an individual calls and they do not have an IIM account?
During the course of an APS investigation?
And I'm thinking that's individual Indian Money's account, right?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
And what, again, the question is, what if that individual, that Osage elder or caregiver, has no account?
Well, then it depends on what their resources are. Maybe they don't have Social Security and they need help applying for Social Security, or they don't know about what resources are available to help them. If they're having a financial difficulty, case by case. Our cases vary from person to person so much that they're really individualized. So if an elder were to call and they were having trouble paying their bills, they didn't have an IIM account for resources to draw upon, then that would be one of my first questions. What is your income? Do you have Social Security? Do you receive food stamps? I mean, we look at every resource they already have in place and what resources can we help connect you with? Can we call financial assistance and apply for crisis? Are we able to help, especially for members who live outside of Osage County? Crisis is one of, crisis, the health benefit program. We want to make sure that they're utilizing those or that they even know about those. And a lot of times they may not know that they can request the Medicare supplement in lieu of the health benefit card. I come across that a lot, which I have to say, the F plan is the Cadillac of Medicare supplements. So the fact that you guys are cognizant of that and that has been something that's been offered, I don't think that a lot of people realize what an amazing benefit that is. I mean, to have Medicare Part A and B, and to have an F plan, and to have a Part D plan, and that's paid for, that's amazing. That means that, I'm sorry, I keep
going. I really want you to just emphasize, we have people listening in that maybe need to hear that repeated about all those plans and why. So please do so they can hear.
Well, the reason, one of the reasons we get really excited about that is because a lot of CDIB holders have used IHS their entire lives. And so when they turn 65, well, I'm not gonna spend that extra $136 for Part B, because I don't need it. I'm just gonna go to IHS for my health care, and whether I paid in and I'm getting Part A, I don't need to enroll in that because I'm good. I'll go to IHS and I'll get my health care. But there are some benefits that Medicare has that you don't get if you don't sign up when you're first eligible. You have 6 months prior to your 65th birthday, the month of, and 3 months after. And if you don't sign up by the last day of that third month after your birthday, then you pay a penalty if you want to sign up later.
And what we see a lot of too, and she probably was going to say this, is that the people that turn 65 that don't have to utilize that part, once they're 70, if they do end up needing the Part B, that they have to back pay for the months that they would have used it from 65. So that's a large expense that a lot of people can't take on. And that's what we see a lot, that there's just not enough information out there for these. And like even myself, I wouldn't have known that without working in social services. And LaDonna, who knows a lot about insurance stuff, would have told me that. I wouldn't have been able to share that with my parents who are elderly, that they would have never known those things.
Brandy?
Thank you, Chair. Hi, LaDonna.
Hi.
Could you give us an example? Because I haven't researched it myself, but there's hearsay out there that if they do miss the window that you're speaking of, that the amount is not just a simple like $100 or $200 or $300. We're talking upwards of $800 to $1,000 to $1,500 back pay, depending on how long they wait. Yeah. And it could be even higher.
It really depends on how long they've waited. And I can't recall the formula. I have to look it up every time. But I know that specifically I'm thinking of a case from last year where the monthly premium for this client, were he to enroll in Part B, would have been more than his Social Security benefits. And of course, you can always request a waiver, but you don't know if you're going to get approved for it. You don't know how long that's going to take. And that's why I just wanted to emphasize how excited I was when I heard that in lieu of the health benefit, first of all, that you increased the health benefit to $1,000 for 65 plus, and second of all, that they can trade that in for the F plan and Part D coverage. It's amazing. I mean, that's not something that most people can afford on their own.
Okay. Paula?
I just wanted to make a comment on that too, on the waivers. You might get with Margie Williams on
yes,
that too.
Yes, Margie
because,
is a yeah, they, really valuable resource.
Right, as long as they've been part of Indian Healthcare or have a CDIB, they're not required to have to pay any of those fees.
Oh.
And so she manages to get around. I think she's got a couple of letters and to work with, so you might have some things with her.
And Paula, could you repeat that again?
Yes.
About so that our audience can listen?
Anyone who's of Medicare age who does not have the supplement for a D plan or an F plan, they can enroll in that without having to pay the penalties because they're a member of the Indian Health Service or have a CDIB card. And that's something that Margie and her group have really worked
yeah.
on at the clinic and managed, because we also at the clinic sponsored Part D plans.
Okay, thank you.
But the penalty that I'm referring to is for if you don't sign up for B when
mm-hmm.
it's first available.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Now, you can sign up for F and mm-hmm. and pay the premium on your own, but and D, mm-hmm. you don't have to sign up for D.
Right.
This is so confusing, and that's why, because of all the letters and the numbers and, you know, it's really difficult and challenging
right.
to navigate, and so a lot of people are just like, meh, I don't want to mess with that. I have IHS, I'm good.
Right.
But B, as far as I'm aware, there's no way to get around that penalty without, I mean, yeah, you can request a waiver, but I haven't seen anybody get approved for the waiver.
Brandy?
Now, you're right with the D, though.
D,
you
yeah.
don't.
Okay.
She answered, Brandy. Thank you. You answered my question because I was alluding to B.
Part B
yes.
is the part of Medicare that pays for doctor's visits, home health. It also pays for rehab and skilled nursing care after you leave the hospital.
Yes.
Say And this is, we come across this a lot in referrals. Someone gets discharged from the hospital, but they're really not ready to go home and live alone yet. So they would be discharged to a rehab facility, which is skilled nursing. And Part B pays for that. And when you have an F plan supplement, it pays for the 20% that B doesn't after the first 20 days. But if you don't have Part B, as in boy, you're not eligible for skilled nursing, which means you do have to go home. And for a lot of people, there's no one there to care for you. I've been a caregiver for several of my family members, and you do it because, but there, some people don't have anyone at home to do it. So that's a big challenge that we see a lot.
A lot.
That generates some questions that I'll have it towards the end of the of your presentation. So I'm just going to allow you to go ahead. Please continue
and
with your
one thing I wanted to add about the IIM account you had asked about, yes. What if they're not an IIM account holder? This specific service is geared just towards IIM account holders. And I don't even know if it's state funded, I'm sure that it is. They offer, like, for people that have Social Security, if they are unable to manage those finances on their own, they will have like a payee service. Like, they have different agencies that will basically do the same thing that we do with their IIM account, make sure their bills are paid on time, that they have their needs and everything like that. And they also do like an individual payee where maybe a family member will step in and take care of those bills for them. So that's one thing that if they don't have the IIM account and they have the Social Security, we can look into that. But as far as we have been told, that is strictly voluntary. So if the person, say they have get Social Security, their own disability, and they just blow all of their money on whatever, they don't have a home, they don't have obviously utilities, they don't buy themselves groceries, they just spend it on unnecessary things, that there's not any way for us to turn that into Social Security and let them know, hey, they're taking advantage of this benefit and not utilizing the funds for things that they actually need, that they can't force them to do it. It has to be strictly voluntary is what I'm trying to get on the payee services for Social Security.
Thank you.
Did you want to say anything else about IIM case management? This is broad. I mean, there are clients that we deliver groceries for.
Right. With this, with the IIM case management, it's from anybody that has an IIM account from the ages of infant to elder. From the federal regs, anybody under the age of 21 is still considered a minor if you have an OSAGE IIM account. So we supervise, and those accounts are to be supervised. So we supervise those accounts for anybody that's 21 and younger. Now, once you turn 21, your account's released unless there is some sort of intake that has come into our office saying maybe they're squandering their funds or someone's taking advantage of them, and that warrants us to go out and do an assessment. So once we determine if there's a need for them to be supervised or not, we can do any sort of services for them. If they have, if they need, like, say they might not have enough money to purchase, they need a lift chair. They might not have the funds to purchase a lift chair. Our program, with funds from the BIA, we can purchase that for them once we make sure that all the other resources are taken, depleted. We have clients that we, and like she said, it's really specific, client specific. We have a client that we deliver groceries to every month just because he doesn't have the family members to help him. We have clients that, well, we do monthly home visits on all of our clients. So it's kind of, we know when they need something, and if they need it, they'll always ask us. And we try to do our best to make sure that they're taken care of. Yes, sir.
In regards to those kinds of services, what about the OSAGE elder that lives in Enid, Oklahoma, or Ardmore, or Portland, Oregon, that has some concerns and calls? How do you service them?
We Mostly within our area here, like, so Tulsa County, Osage County, most of our clients are within a 100-mile radius of us. Now, because these are federal funds, the BIA offers this service as well. Not here in Pawhuska, because we've taken over that role. Now, there's other social services agencies with the BIA, like in Muskogee. If we have somebody who lives in Muskogee, they would take over that account, and they would do those services. Now, I don't know if they're going to go pick up groceries for somebody like we do, but they will still do the same services that are required by the regulations for them to take care of their funds.
Okay, and again, I'm speaking because we in Congress, we have to assure that all of our Osages, wherever they may be, whether it's in Oregon or Kentucky or Washington, D.C., get something from us as the Osage Nation and the various divisions and programs that we have. You know, elders are elders wherever they are, and the caregivers of them are same. And I'm just thinking, if that generates another question, I'll save for the end.
Go ahead.
Alice?
Okay, so what would you say the breakdown is in the age ranges that you serve? Because I'm hearing from zero, and I get that, from zero to elder when you're talking about IIM. So you could potentially be serving someone who is, 30 or 35, who maybe has mental health issues or maybe substance abuse issues, and they have been deemed not capable of taking care of their own finances through either the state or through their family working with the BIA, so that their IIM account is in a status of they're not competent to take care of themselves. So just out of curiosity, how many elders do you serve over the age of 65? And then what are your other breakdowns? I'm just curious, there's limited people that are in your office. So who are you mostly serving it comes to these IIM accounts?
The IIM account specific, I'm going to say roughly about 45 accounts that we service that includes the minors and over 21. I'm going to say less than 10 of those, maybe less than 5 are over the age of 65. We don't have, the majority of them are 30, their 40s or 50s. But there's not very many that are over, that I can think of, and I could be wrong not looking at, but I would say about maybe 5 to 10, no more than 10.
Now, the majority of our APS referrals are 65 plus. We do receive a few referrals on younger people, like I said, that may have, like you said, mental health issues or substance abuse issues, but primarily the APS referrals are 65 plus.
Thank you.
I think that's it. And generally with the IIM accounts within the state of Oklahoma, we try to have them under our, if they're supervised, we try to do it ourselves because we feel like we can probably do better services than somebody that doesn't know. And neither one of us are Osage, but we have both grown up here and worked for the tribe. So we know a little bit about the Osage culture. And we try to make sure that our elders or anybody that we're giving services to are taken care of to the best of the abilities that we can. And so we try to take over those accounts and do the best that we can do. Because we've come to find out that some tribes that have taken over some of our accounts because they were closer, maybe didn't do services as well as they could have been done.
Explain that, what you just said. Some tribes take over our accounts?
Correct, yes.
And they service our elders in another tribal reservation?
Right, yes, just because we want it to be more convenient for them. So if we have a client who lives maybe in Oklahoma City, there are tribes that do the same service that we do that can take over those same roles that we do. And we want it to be convenient for the client. That way, if they need something and they need someone to come out and do a home visit, maybe that person's within 30 miles and can get out there sooner than we that are 2.5 hours away can get out there. But we've come to find out that that's not always the best practice, that it's better for us to take over these accounts because we know the regulations for Osage because it's completely different than somebody with a Pawnee account. And we can help serve those people better than a different tribe.
Okay, and making that kind of statement for us as a health committee and members of Congress, and you say it's advantageous for you to take over
their services. Yeah, that's probably a bad way to say
it. I mean, where is it legally, or and I can't quote anything in our tribal law that says you do that, or perhaps it needs to be somewhere that says we do that.
Maybe it's not the best term to say take over, because I don't want us to ever feel like we're over anybody. But from the federal regulations and from our, there's different things. There's the federal regulations that we have to follow, the CFRs, the 117 and then 115 that deal with the supervised IIM accounts. And then we have some manuals from the BIA that's given to us that we kind of go off of as rules to manage these accounts. And
but no other there's not another agency that is as familiar with 117 as the Osage agency,
right?
And as our department, because 117 only applies to Osage IIM accounts.
Correct. There's a couple different ways that account becomes supervised, and Alice had brought it up too about either a medical professional has to deem the person to be incompetent of managing their own finances. There has to be a guardianship, like through a district court, or they have to do it voluntary. They have to say, "Hey, I can't pay my bills. I know I can't pay my bills. Would you guys please help me take care of these services?" And yes.
I'm just going to dip in because things keep popping up.
Yeah, go ahead. You're fine.
In my head. When you think of, say, an individual, say, who is an elder or not, is suspicions of being incompetent. And you said they go to the district court or some court other than our tribal court. Is that correct?
Right. The Code of Federal Regulations does not approve tribal court as a court of competency.
Trey?
Oh, we've recently been trying to fight that, but that's
why?
I think that was it the
wait a minute, I'm gonna ask Trey, okay. Just get him, I know he's here on his he likes us, so he's here. But we made a statement that an individual can be out here and suspicion to be incompetent, whether they're 35 or an elder, and then have to go through a district or local court or some court in Southern California to deem that person. I got to thinking, I said, why not go through our tribal court system? And it was stated that CFRs or somebody,
the BIA
at the Vatican says they don't recognize our court to be able to do that. And I began to say, why the heck not? Why can't we? Our courts take care of our own people and make those decisions, as opposed to a non-Indian entity out there. That's my question. And I don't, if that is a question.
I would guess that they are trying to keep from that type of power being abused on people of the tribe, but I don't know for sure. I have not seen any kind of written paper on that issue, so I could do a little research for you.
Little research would be fine, just to answer mine.
I'm guessing it's to keep tribes from getting all the political fights, from designating their opponent as, having their friend who's the judge down at the courthouse designate them as incompetent.
We had a meeting, okay. And I actually wasn't attending this meeting. LaDonna was our attorney general about this same question as why, because sometimes the CFRs are dated, so they kind of contradict themselves about a bunch of things. There's some spots in there where they even say that they will accept power of attorneys. And then I think that there was some sort of act or something that was approved that said that they're no longer going to approve the power of attorneys. And then that's when they went in and said that a tribal court is not deemed to be a court of competency.
Yeah.
Even though the CFRs say that a court of competency, including a tribal court, they've since then said no.
And we have a, I feel like we've veered way off course, but yeah, we have discussed this with the AG's office on another unrelated matter, but it was in relation to an IIM account issue, and I don't have that. I don't have that information with me, but I can get it to you.
Okay. Well, I'm interrupting and dipping in a lot, and I know you need to finish your presentation, but I feel I can just generate questions from our elders out there are account holders or non-account holders. They're still older people, and they happen to be Osage. And how can we, as in our division, we're all here at this table trying to take care of our elders and the social services that we can render to them. And how can we best do that? How can we make it better? And what are we void in? Those kind of, and that's probably another meeting, but I'll be quiet and let you finish your presentation.
So those are the two services that we provide in our office that are geared towards or can be geared towards elders. Now, with APS and IIM, the first step is a referral. A lot of times people, like I said, are not all that happy to see us when we first get there, believe it or not. If an APS referral comes in, I'm the APS worker, so in addition to the other hats I've got now, I go knock on the door and I approach, you know, from what are your needs and how can I help you get them met? And anyway, so.
Are you taking with you when you go knock on the door?
I go alone. If there is a reason that I've been provided with information about like firearms in the home or anything that makes me feel like maybe I should take somebody with me, then I will ask either the sheriff's office or if it's within the jurisdiction, I ask ONPD, and they have gone out with me on several referrals. Sometimes that can exacerbate a volatile situation anyway, so I may ask them to park a couple houses down, but be available in case I text you and say help or, but that doesn't usually happen. Most of my referrals are self-neglect, and I would say 60% of the people are happy to see me once they know what I can do for them and how I can help them. They may not be happy when they answer the door because it's social services, you know. That has a negative connotation with a lot of people. And a lot of people are just not trusting of any kind of intrusion, and I get that. So, but yeah, sometimes I'm alone. Sometimes if the referral is on state land, we have a compact with the state of Oklahoma, and so OKDHS sends a worker with me if they have screened the referral in, but we go out on all the referrals that we receive. So if they've screened it out, we still go visit.
I have to smile a minute. I'm 74 years old, and if somebody knocks on my door and I don't know who they are, they don't come in.
Yeah.
Speaker Walker.
I didn't realize the services were so broad. Mm-hmm. So you make show up at the door and ask them what they need, and maybe to have some sort of infestation that they haven't been able to get rid of. You could pay those services.
Mm-hmm. It's possible. I mean, of course, we always have to exhaust other resources. And it's funny that you bring that up because I'm known around the office of having a little bit of a phobia of critters.
Yes.
But yes, I come across that very frequently, and that is something that we've done. you know, but with as with anything else, we have to exhaust other resources first, you know, because if there's a resource right here that's going to pay, I'm not going to, you know, circumvent that and make it easier on myself. We're going to fill out the paperwork and we're going to, you know, find a way to get it done without using our funds if we don't have to. Because we do have limited funding and we want to make sure that we use it for the greatest need.
Okay, I'm going to ask you a question because I should know this and I don't. What are your funds when you say you have limited funds for that service per se? That's through a federally funded something. And what is that block of dollars that you have?
Well, I didn't bring our budget.
Okay, that's all right. We'll save that for another time.
Us two are funded, I think, through social services funds from the BIA.
We also, there are tribal funds for social services that are available for our clients as well.
Okay.
Now, most of our funding is geared toward Indian Child Welfare.
Okay.
But there are funds that are available for our clients, for the adults.
Okay.
And a lot of times we utilize, you know, other tribal resources too, like crisis. Okay. A lot of people don't know about crisis, and it is, you know, it is very broad, and I'm thankful for that because there are a lot of situations where it's needed, but that situation may not fit into any other block except that. And so I'm grateful that it's there, and I'm thankful for it.
I just want to make a comment because I've worked with LaDonna on some cases, and just to get to the bare bones, every ugly job you can think of that you would not want to do, they go in and take care of it.
Yep.
We hear that a lot.
I really appreciate them, the cases that they've just come in and taken it over, and it's been wonderful, and they've dealt with it, and it's been all kinds of levels of needed care. So there is a broad spectrum of what they do and the coordination of services. It's amazing.
And once that is accomplished, then is there continued care and wellness and health for that individual to make sure that they don't repeat that? This is how you keep it clean. This is how you keep this done. And continue, you know, is there a follow-up on that after you?
That's the tough part, because adults have the right to live the way they want to live. It's not okay for me to come and tell you that, well, that's not how I would do it, you know. And so the challenging thing for us, especially for the APS side, is I will receive repeat referrals, because if you've lived one way for, you know, 80 years and this is the way you've always done it, even if it may not be the best thing for you, it's going to be really hard to change. And it's not my job to go in and tell you that what you should and shouldn't do, unless you're not able to make these decisions on your own. Then we do try and find a guardian who can help that person long term. Of course we educate, and of course we provide referrals for services that are going to go on even after the referral is over, because like I said, the referral only typically lasts for 30 days. So that's that 30-day window that I have to get in there and get services arranged to eliminate this crisis situation, whatever it is. But yes, we try and arrange as many follow-up services as possible within the time that we're involved. But I get many repeat referrals just because adults have the right to live how they want to live.
Okay, thank you.
It may not be best for them, but that's their right because they're a grown-up. And that's challenging, you know, but...
Then as social workers, one of the very first things I can remember being taught when I moved over to social services is that we never want to project our feelings or our beliefs on our clients, because what we think is right doesn't mean that's always going to be what they think is right or how they've lived for their entire lives.
Yeah, and what's best for you is not best for me necessarily, and that's best practice for social work.
If there's a referral, say, that comes from that you are aware of that comes from Portland, Oregon, or Anaheim, California, or an Osage in that particular situation? Do you get feedback, or do you get a report somehow in your office that individual is in harm's way, if you will, in their lifestyle or whatever? But it is what it is.
Yeah, there are sometimes that we'll have people from California that will call our office looking for services, and what we do is we initially, especially if they live on state land with the APS referral, we have to turn that into the state. So if they're in California, we have to turn that into the Department of Human Services in California for them to be the leads on those cases. Now, what we've seen a lot here lately is because of funding cuts for the states, they don't always go out on those referrals. They have different categories that they put them in. Some of them, they do all of the work straight from their desk where they make phone calls. Instead of doing face-to-face visits, they'll call the elder and talk to him over the phone. Well, I think how the codes are written for us, any call of concern, we have to initiate and do a face-to-face visit. So we do go out and see these people. Now, not in California. We don't have the resources to fly to California to go out and do a visit with someone there. But we try to continue to follow up and make sure that these services are in place for those people.
Thank you. I'm just letting you know I really enjoy this, but we're at 10 minutes till 2, and if we don't get finished, I'm planning on calling us all back in about a month, January 22nd. We could continue with this if we don't get finished today, because to me, this is all very important. We're talking about elder care and any kind of questions we might be able to generate between now and 3 or 4 weeks from now. We can do so, and if we got any input from those folks that are listening in, same way. And I may just go ahead and just stop us right here and then say we'll just stop and then come back and finish up. And I'm going to encourage to make note, and I'll be posting this up for our next Health and Social Service meeting on the 22nd, January 22nd, at 1 o'clock right here. And we'll continue with reports. And in the meantime, any of us around this table, the members of the committee, feel free to survey either however you wish. Talk to some elders. See what you think their needs are. See if feel like they're being serviced by the Osage Nation. And see if there's I'm thinking of certain elders around us and around that I know of that I think it'd be an advantage just to connect with them and ask them how they're being serviced, or are they being serviced enough by us? You know, we accept the compliments, but also the complaints as well to make it better. And that's what we're all here to do, is trying to make it better, better our services, and get the communication. Things that you stated today, there's some people out here didn't know about it, I'm sure. And I wanted you to reinforce that, say it again so they can hear you. But you know, that's another thing I'll bring up later, is you know, how maybe we need a newsletter or something, just from the health or social service newsletter from this committee to send out to everyone that's 65 and older, or to the caregivers of the folks, to know these are the kinds of services that are available to you, either from us or we'll tell you where to get them, kinds of things. There was 2 years ago, the booklet that came out of all of the services from it was a nice booklet from the Nation, but that has since changed. It changes every 2 weeks, I think. So anyways, you know, when it gets to social services, all the things you ladies are doing there are probably not necessarily listed the same now in that booklet. And we are doing some things. And I'll let our health members know, our committee members, that at another time I'm going to have the clinic people come down and share with us about what is available through for elders through up on the hill from the clinic point of view, so we can kind of get a handle on elder services. As sitting as chair, I'm focused on elder care right now, not only just because I am one, but for all of those that are out there that we all know about, and someday you guys will be there too, and we want to make sure things are set up just for the best we can, and how can we make it better, and for us as a committee. But I'm sure there's other questions. I kind of feel like I've monopolized all of the conversation today. But as we think about next time you guys come back with part two in your presentation, there'll be some more questions that come your way. Members of the committee, you got any questions about part one? If not, chair would entertain a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Those in favor say amen.
Amen.
Amen. Amen. Merry Christmas.
This year. This is a great presentation.
Basically, give myself a reminder on my phone. And
boy, these are two things right here. Really,
I somehow sent out an invite.
That was going to be my key question. Then I saw that slide. I'm like, well, wait.